Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 232 of What Most People Think, and I am so delighted to have got back on the show a guest and friend. Is Catherine Ryan. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, and we've only taken 2 hours of personal chat before getting into this podcast.
Yeah, it's kind of weird when you do this sort of thing, is we've been talking normally and then we both slightly, I've adopted a different like presenterly register to
no,
my voice.
No, this is just you.
This is just, is that
you're
how
very natural.
Naturally sort of like present. This is from my stints doing Times Radio, you see. I'm going to throw it to the news in a minute.
Maybe the listeners don't know the real you.
Maybe I am sort of a bit Alan Partridge-y.
Yeah, TV's Jeff Norcutt.
TV's Jeff. I'm a lot more interested in the world wars than I used to be. So this is a podcast like for people first listening to it, because now the Keep It Light media empire now advertising my podcast across all their great podcasts that get genuine listenerships. So it's kind of best way I can explain it is I am sort of coming from a slightly right of centre view, but today's a good example of having reaching out across the political and cultural divide to somebody that might think a little bit differently, like yourself. Not on everything, but you know.
I don't know. I feel like I've been radicalized by you and my husband, and just by like age.
Yeah.
I'm over 40 now, just, and I'm a lot more centrist. I think you and I would be billed as I'm super woke, left wing, yeah, champagne socialist, and then you're like the right wing comedian, right, Jeff Norcutt. And neither of those descriptions are that accurate. We're far more centrist than people would like to believe.
It's a patchwork thing, isn't it? I mean, I think we've actually had programs that have discussed that, you know, where they've sort of said, we've been on meetings and they've said, well, the great thing is that you're going to really clash. And we're like, oh, clash. Yeah, we'll definitely, we'll clash over this. But I think it's true that these days most people have got a patchwork of opinions now.
Yeah.
I think that there was a time when it was Brexit, it was really simple, Leaver, Remainer. Then there was COVID and some people who were Remainers found that a lot of the Remainers were very much pro-lockdown and some people didn't feel like that. And then there'd be like stuff around race and then there'd be stuff about gender. And you've actually gone, maybe I don't fucking have a gang anymore.
People aren't prepared to accept the patchwork hypotheses though. They
the
think that
hypotheses.
A Leave person,
yeah,
also has to be an anti-vax person.
And that's not true, is it? Because a lot of like Leave voters were a lot older generally. And mm-hmm. then a lot of them were very in favour of lockdown stuff. Remainers, I will say straight away, I think that they all love Meghan Markle, but that might not be true. It's more likely.
Yeah, I love her. My husband doesn't, though.
Yeah.
We were invited, well, I was invited and my husband was a plus one, to this wonderful charity that raised money for children navigating difficult medical issues. And it's a great charity, but Prince Harry, or now I guess he's just known as Harry, the Duke of Sussex, he's their patron. And I was going to this charity event. I didn't realize that he was actually going to be there. And only on the way there did I realize, I double checked the invite and said, you have to bring your passport. And I went, why is that? And my husband said, oh, security checks, look at this invite. Prince Harry is going to be there. And when we arrived, I was taken into a room to meet Prince Harry and my husband wasn't allowed in the room. And my husband was like, oh, do you know why? It's because they do their background checks. And he has spoken unfavorably about Meghan Markle, and we think that's why he wasn't invited.
That is such a stamp of, that's a good thing, isn't it? Like a lot of people would go, that is a credibility right there.
Mm-hmm.
He's rejected by the establishment from the room.
Yeah.
Or was he thinking like maybe Harry wanted, like, is he going to be chatting you up or something? You know?
It was me and a lot of other people, but yeah, notably not my husband in that room. And my husband, we didn't even realize, and I went to walk in the room and I was holding my husband's hand and they were like, no.
Yeah.
Just you.
Fuck you, Bobby.
I know.
And the stuff that you said about our amazing podcast.
Yeah. You didn't even say anything that bad.
Well, did you see now, like, there's a lot of things media-wise. It was a Spotify for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of like throwing money and going, right, we're going to have like Joe Rogan podcast, which hits, actually delivers, right? Actually delivers this huge listenership.
Yeah.
And then they were like, what about Harry and Meghan have a podcast? And then they gave him loads of money. And did you ever listen to any of the content?
I didn't. I saw that it was panned. I think they've had a really tough year, actually.
It was a tough year. I mean, they are at the point, I suppose, Harry and Meghan, whereby they've got to call someone a nonce, really, to get people back interested. They fired a lot of their shots.
And I'm sure they have a load of family members to choose from. Way more than we know
about. They've got to literally just say, I woke up and he was at the end of the bed touching himself. I mean, that is, because now I think they should have rationed their shit a bit further, like peppered it out. But they went, that Oprah one, they went big on that.
That was good.
The book, it's kind of like you now either have to shut up about the royal family and say something else that's interesting or just start making shit up.
I like the direction Harry went with Spare, the book, because he sort of did the same that I did. Now, your books, Jeff, are very informative, well-researched. They're really funny. Loads of, like, punchy beats to those. But I grew up on the celebrity autobiography. When I first came to this country, I saw Katie Price being Jordan in a shop window. And I thought, who is this woman? We didn't know her in Canada. I was 22 years old. I wanted to being Jordan. I thought, I'm going to read that. And I loved hearing about her exploits with Dane Bowers and everything else. So when I did my memoir, I tried to add some comedy, some serious bits. But ultimately, my language of love is secrets. And I wanted to talk about like fucking and different things like that, the way Katie Price did. And then Prince Harry went the same way, talking about his frozen todger and losing his virginity.
Yeah. He talks about some weird stuff as well.
Yeah, he sure did.
I mean, your book, The Audacity, you wanted to go for like a more like tell all, this is me sort of disclosure type thing.
I think so. I mean, it's a little bit of a how-to, like how to have a really fun life and do what you want. But I tell a little backstory of this and that, how I reconnected with Bobby, how this happened, mistakes I've made, mistakes with men mostly. I've nailed every other area of my life. But,
I thought you were going to say something else. When you said mistakes with men, you said I've nailed. I thought next thing was going to be half of the college team, the Backstreet Boys.
Ooh, yeah, no. I mean, I was on a tour bus with Blink-182 one time. But Travis Barker, who is now Kourtney Kardashian Barker's husband, he was always Travis. Like, he was always the way we see him. I know you probably peek in and watch the Kardashians with your wife now and then. He was always gentle and kind, and we did go to a strip club, but he was, you could see that he had the responsibility of facilitating VIP status for his entourage, and he himself wasn't really interested in being there. He was married at the time to his ex-wife.
That sounds like what I'd tell my missus, babe, but I was only there to do the VIP for the, I actually was really tired. I was reading a book.
He was really tired, and he was just drumming on his knee and having conversations about his kids and his wife, and he was not even drinking, I don't think. I mean, lovely, very gentle vegan.
None of that. You don't need to be in a strip club to do any of that. I'd say just one of the nicer Cafe Neros. Yeah. That would actually be a good place for that. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about some of the news stuff. So I'm sure you're aware that Britain has launched airstrikes on, I mean, this is like the fucking handbrake turn, isn't it, subject-wise? But we've launched strikes on the Houthi rebels. And every part of me wants to do and the blowfish gag. Yeah. Has anybody done the Houthi and the blowfish, or is that too crass when there's actually...
I don't think it's crass. I mean, look.
Houthis and the blowfish.
You're working with what you've got in the news. The airstrikes aren't your fault, presumably.
Yeah.
You got to make comedy from it however you can. I think it's not any comedy at the expense of the victims. No. It's adjacent. It's airstrike adjacent.
Yeah. I'm actually mocking the tropes of tabloid newspapers that might say like Houthi and the blowback or something, something like that. We're going to talk about David Cameron being back on the scene. Dave is fully back now. He's doing the rounds. He was talking to Laura Koonsberg. There's also a problem that it creates for Keir Starmer. He's essentially got to go back on yet another of his principles. I think at some point Keir Starmer's just going to say his name's not Keir Starmer. I think that's all he's got left to do a U-turn on. He's just going to say his name's Roger Phillips or something. And the nanny state parenting, so I thought we might be a good one to discuss, is that Labour have sort of said they're not as afraid of doing nanny state parenting. And Wes Streeting, the Shadow Health Secretary, said that we're going to do supervised teeth brushing in schools. So I'll be interested to get your thoughts on that. And then in the Patreon-only section, we're going to have candid questions for Kath. This is the shittest format name. Have you ever had that thing in TV? Because you get pitched a lot of stuff where, like, the idea is so fucking wafer thin that you have to not laugh at it. Like,
yes. One time that stands out. I can't even say what it was because I don't want the person the pitch. But it was really like, we're cool bitches talking about wild shit. And then it was, you know, they'll do...
Was that the title?
Yeah, it was something like that. It was awful. And it was like, Catherine Ryan talking shit about shit. And it was populated with different female comedians. And there were hypothetical stories that some of these women would be telling. So they had London Hughes, like, pisses herself on a night bus. And then they had Ellie Taylor, like, chucking up on her best Louboutins after a night out. And
oh, right, so this is female comics being bad bitches. And apparently... That takes the form of vomiting on shoes. That is...
Let me find it for you.
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear that. Because this is the thing, is that when people in telly realise that a talent is hot, sometimes the desire to make a programme with that person will precede the idea itself. So they'll just sort of, sometimes they'll take a sort of a skim across your personality. Like an example, if someone wanted to make a TV programme, It would be Jeff Norcott, you can't say nothing no more. That would be it. I don't think that completely.
Like that.
I think there's a lot of things that are harder to say. Or Jeff Norcott, why I love the Queen, you know, something like, I do love the Queen. Actually, these are actually two really good ideas.
I love the Queen, and I really miss the Queen.
Yeah.
She was great.
She had normal shaped hands. So did you have to confront your feelings about this idea with them in the room, or was it you were just reading a Word document thinking, what the fuck is this?
Luckily, it was just sent as a Word document.
Right, okay.
But it was absolutely, it was the worst. I mean, it was like AI had decided what a funny woman was.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There you go.
And they basically done a word cloud of some of the words that you said. Right, she says the word bitch.
Yeah.
And she believes in FEMA, bad bitches being sick in pavements.
Exactly. And I've never had that life. I've always, you know, I've always been way more boring than that, but also a little bit more highbrow.
Well, this is the thing with comedy, isn't it? I have this discussion with, certainly when people get to know you, they often sort of say, well, oh, you're not that extreme. I mean, it's the age old thing of like every comic, when you see them on stage, is given a little run around to a piece of their pie chart. It's not the whole pie chart.
No.
But it might just be the funniest bit of the pie chart. But then sometimes when people get to know you, they go, oh, but you're not like that in real life. You go, have you ever tried to just talk normally on stage and you see how quickly you lose the audience? You have to slightly overdrive everything, a little bit.
Well, doesn't Chris Rock, when he tests new material, wears a hat and he just talks in this voice, like he sounds like me,
or
basically.
Or just flat voice.
Flat voice.
Yeah.
And it's not until he gets the shiny suit on and is doing a show when he starts to be Chris Rock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The hat is the bit I'm stuck on. I'm just thinking, is it like a Superman-style shit disguise? Where
I think so.
Everyone goes, well, that's clearly Chris Rock.
No.
So we're going to laugh a lot at whatever he says.
Could be anyone.
Is it like a deer stalker, maybe?
Yeah, hat? Trucker cap, sports team. He's just very
one of those ones with
soft.
Like, you know, the way you can put the beer in either side and
yeah.
The tube comes down to...
Yeah, I mean, it's real nondescript.
A burka, perhaps.
Blending in.
So we'll have some candid questions for Kath from our board member level patrons. So that'll be in the patron only bit of the show. And of course, if you want to be a part of that and get the show ad free early and with bonus content, you just go to Patreon.
Just be a Patreon. How much is it?
Well, it goes for anything from £3. See how much more cooperative you are in this moment. Romesh just shits on it. Every time he comes on this podcast, he shits on every tier of my podcast. And I've got a board member level, right? Which is you just up your pledge to £20 and you get a free copy of my book, Where Did I Go Right? I do an inscription. I send it to you, but he thinks that's all bullshit. Well, let me tell you, Romesh, if you're listening, is that the board member questions this week, we had a board member meeting, and so we'll have some questions for Kath. And
I mean, if he thinks that's a shit thing to do for money, he should see Judge Romesh.
What most people think.
Okay, first up, we're going to do the thank you and the fuck you. I will take the thank you and you can do the fuck you. I'm going to say thank you to, well, being a grown-up, and what I mean by that is that I went to see the film Poor Things at the cinema on Friday last week. I had a lot of time to kill in London. I had a thing in the morning, one of these, you know, Jeremy Vine type things. I had a thing at 6 p.m, had a bit in the middle to kill. Right, what's a boring film that I could either get into or fall asleep to, right? So I thought, well, I've seen this thing about Emma Stone at the Golden Globes. I'm going to go and watch Poor Things, right? Now, I swear to God, I lasted 31 minutes of this shit show. It's the worst kind of like film studies friendly bollocks. I mean, the moment that the actors were saying, oh my God, so brave. The moment I heard the word brave, I should have just put a big red line through it. Very brave. And it's just stylistically wonderful. You know, the way there was about 7 minutes in, an audience member did, you know, the laugh, not a real laugh, but I know I'm supposed to laugh.
Oh, no.
She went, that laugh,
like,
right?
I get it. I'm smart.
I'm smart. The same one that people do at Shakespeare. Now, the thank yous to myself is because I have the life experience to, at 31 minutes, get up noisily and just fuck off. Even if
You left. You could have had a lovely sleep.
No, but I couldn't have a sleep because these are the reasons. One, it was a weird film. How do we know it's weird? Because every 5 minutes, they do a weird violin sting, like they're just going, this is a weird film.
What is it about?
Right, can I tell you the concept? And I'll genuinely, I've never said this before on my podcast, is trigger warning and spoiler alert, right?
So the
concept is about a Victorian woman who throws herself off a bridge, and then a Dr. Frankenstein type crossed with fucking Truman Show type weirdo brings her to life. But because at the time that she dies, she has an infant, you know, she's pregnant with child.
Oh.
This is so gross. It honestly makes, is he takes the brain and puts it in the woman's body. So the Frankenstein, and by the way, I did give you a trigger warning. This is, it's very gross to me. This. So he puts the child's brain in the woman's body, and then the woman is sort of growing up and becoming a woman through the brain of her.
So she's a baby in Emma Stone's body.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for putting it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the elevator pitch. That's actually the best way to sell the film. See, that film in the 90s would have been hilarious, yeah. Right?
It
would have
Baby's had Day Out, but hot. Yeah.
And it would have had John Travolta in, and yeah. It would have been really funny. But no, it was so...
So she can't walk and stuff, and she's incontinent?
Yeah, quite. Yeah, all that stuff. And then, like, but then starts discovering her own body, to put it mildly.
What?
Yeah, so I'm sort of thinking, and this is the part of the reason I brought it up, Hollywood has had a problem recently of people saying, well, you know, like people in the South going, they're doing all kinds of weird shit down there. They're goddamn pedophiles. They're nonsense. I don't know if Americans say nonsense. But what we have now is arguably a level beyond nonce. I think that the concept of the film is actually an Inception-level version of nonsense. I was offended. It's years since I've been genuinely offended, but I was offended.
So how old's the baby brain when Emma Stone starts to be, like,
well,
it's sexual?
So
the body's Emma Stone, but baby brain now is what, 6 months, 2 years?
Yeah, it's very young.
Still
a
young.
A baby, yeah, effectively.
A baby.
Baby with a few words.
A baby with a few words, so like a year old.
Yeah.
And she wanks or meets someone?
All of that in sequence. Right.
So it's a little bit like Tom Hanks in Big.
But with wanking. Yeah, the beauty of the film Big was that you never sort of saw that. I mean, he does, oh my God, actually he does sleep, doesn't he? Or he comes close to sleeping with that.
I think he has sex with that woman.
Okay.
Let's check. That this is the beauty of having phones. I remember it as they had a physical relationship, I'm sure.
It's the problem is that old thing of you go, teenage boy, an older woman.
That's exactly it, because he was... Okay, big star Elizabeth Perkins says implied sex scene in Tom Hanks' film wouldn't be made today. We're in a different time. Well, yes, Elizabeth.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was a 13-year-old boy living in the body of an adult man in 1988. But there was implied sex.
But that film was glossy. It also had the lovely piano scene where...
He takes her shirt off, he touches her breast, and then we cut to the elevator door opening. He's got a big smile on his face. He banged her. But I mean, in 1988, we're all 13-year-olds, just basically fathers of two holding down full-time jobs. You know, it was a different time. I think
if we go to the sort of like the Rust Belt states of America, some of them might have thought that was a bit late to be settling down in some ways. You know, being 13 years old. So
ew.
I just want to say, like, it's horrible. It's a genuinely horrible film. And apologies to anybody that didn't take my trigger warning seriously and as being grossed out.
No,
by that.
Like, lesson learned. Take Jeff's trigger warning seriously.
Fuck Hollywood.
And his spoiler alerts.
I'm just going to throw in a thank you, though. A real palate cleanser was the return of Gladiators on television on Saturday. Did 6 million, and they didn't mess with the format at all.
Good.
It just brought it back. It was good, clean. Family fun. They didn't have as many racially dodgy nicknames. Because, you know, back in the day, all the black gladiators were called, like, Shadow, Nightshade, and Ebony, and, like, really, really fucking root one stuff. So they didn't have any of that.
What were they called instead? Did they just not have black ones? Or
No, they had, like, lots of different races. Yeah, that would be an awful... So what we've done is, to deal with that, we've only white guys this time. No, they were the slightly more boring names, the truth be told. Like, they were... Athena.
Malcolm X.
They had like a saber, lightning, you know.
Did they have any of the older ones back as pundits or anything?
No. Bradley Walsh is hosting.
Oh, with his son. So good.
He's lovely, Bradley.
How old's his son?
He's about 20. I mean, like, if you want to talk about Nepo babies, you know, this is it. He's gone. I'll do the gig, but my son has to do it with me. Now, his son's not bad as a co-presenter. I did think it could have done with a sort of female co-host.
Yeah.
You know, it was, but he's Bradley Walsh. He's gone, I'll do it, but only if my son can do it with me.
Nice.
Did give my son ideas, though. Seb was like, oh, is that possible? No. Fucking no. You get once a year on the podcast, mate.
Can I be on Question Time? Yes, you can.
The fuck you, Kath. Are you got a beef, something you want to share?
Well, I mean, on the subject of how women are represented, I very much am not a baby-minded lady. I have opinions, I have a podcast. And unfortunately, the themes in my podcast always get picked up by news tabloid media because journalists now do very little investigation and it's a lot of cut and paste. And in a way, I'm grateful for that because I feel like I understand how clickbait works. I don't expect you to get the whole story correct. And at least you're advertising my podcast, telling everybody everything.
Great podcast.
But on this occasion, they didn't mention the podcast. They lifted some excerpts from my trip to Disneyland Paris with my family, and they printed only my criticisms about Disneyland in all the tabloids, and they said that I'd spoken exclusively to someone, like Catherine Ryan speaks exclusively to Richard Eden from The Sun, I think that's his name, and says that Disneyland High Street was a piece of trash with parents vaping and and yeah, I did say that stuff, but I didn't say it to a journalist, and I said loads of nice things about Disneyland as well. Mm. And what I feel badly about is the real casualty of this miscommunication, deliberate misunderstanding by the tabloids, is Disneyland Paris and the lovely PR lady that I spoke to about getting a table for dinner, because now I feel like she'll be horrified. I booked my trip to Disneyland Paris with the family, paid for it in full myself. Mm. I wasn't looking for a freebie or anything, but I do have contacts to the PRs for Disney. So I reached out and I said, oh, is there a way that, you know, we can get a table? I struggle with hotels that will take a number of guests, but then can't accommodate them for dinner.
Yes.
It's just like a personal customer service
bugbear. Well, it's a minimum level service.
I think so. Yeah. So there was no room for dinner. I'm like, can we do something here? You know, I'm kind of Catherine Ryan. Like I did. Of course, I'm reaching out
the Catherine
to be
Ryan
like,
card.
I have almost a million followers. Yeah. Like, can you help me?
I was involved in the development of Catherine Ryan and Bad Bitches.
Yeah. Yes. And she said, oh, yeah, you can. We'll get you a booking at this one steakhouse. We didn't end up going because it was an inconvenient time for the babies. And she linked me up with this extra service you can pay. Mm. You can pay $3,000, which is crazy amount of money, but I feel like it's worth it to have a Disney liaison to just walk you around for 6 hours, a group of up to 10 people, and you don't wait to go on any rides. You just go straight to the front of the queue and you really just hit all the rides you want to hit. It's the only way to do it.
You're right. It's a lot of money.
It's
I feel like
money.
The only way that would have value, I've done Queue Jump at Legoland. They have to be Disney themed. If they're not doing it as a princess, magically with a wand going, oh, look, you're at the front of the Inceptor roller coaster. I want everything to be like Disney themed. So when that princess rocks up, oh, I'm showing you around today. Oh, but my parents died when I was young.
Wow.
So that's a classic Disney thing. And then they just unpack that, weave a narrative, and then maybe we'll talk.
I didn't ask if her parents had tragically died.
But
it's real. It's the coming of age story.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But she was dressed sort of like a wizard. And she was beautiful and she was really knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So there were good things about Disney. And my biggest regret is that I think I went with the children too young. I think they were too soon
to
go.
We did that with Seb, yeah. He's 1.5.
But no disrespect to Disney. I had a lot of creative, constructive criticism in there. But the way that it was reported in the tabloid media, fuck you, because this PR woman now is thinking, what happened? Why is this horrible write-up? Why'd Catherine ring up The Sun?
Catherine Ryan
to
says,
bitch about Disneyland.
Catherine Ryan says, fuck Goofy.
Right.
So yeah, 1.5 Seb was just like, it was just weird. Like we just got on the Ratatouille ride. At that point, life is like one big hallucination. So when that mouse is coming out, he's just like, yeah, I see shit like this all the time.
I know.
We're going to get into the first big subject of the week, which is the UK and the US with the joint strike on Yemen. The subject lurches this week.
Oh, Yemen.
Going to be next level. Yeah, yeah, it's to do with Yemen.
So why are you calling it Houthi?
So I'm calling it Houthi because the Houthi rebels are rebelling against the Yemen state, I think.
So Houthi is like ISIS?
Yeah, yeah, they're sort of a rebel militant force, but apparently they've got some serious ideological stuff. They think that they were direct descendants of Mohammed. Some of it is quite bizarre, actually, their setup. And then the Saudis have been in a proxy war with them because if they think if Yemen becomes Houthi, there's going to be some blowback. Oh, I tried to do a blowfish gag there. It was never going to work. And so the Saudis have been bombing them. And then the Houthi rebels have been hitting commercial shipping lanes because of the Israel-Gaza thing, right? So they're saying, we're doing this in support of them. And so, you know, the UK and the US have gone, stop hitting those ships, man.
So Houthi is in support of Hamas?
I guess, yeah, I think so, broadly speaking. But they would say they were in support of the Palestinian people.
So politically... Oh, God. See, we need you, Jeff, to explain these things in layman's terms.
I don't think you can understand this stuff. I think you can understand the most recent thing. And what happened was they were hitting these shipping lanes, right? So what was happening, bit by bit, a lot of ships were going, well, we're not fucking going down that shipping lane because they're firing rockets at us. They're literally attacking us.
Sure.
So then there was this thing, like, oh, shit, we're just coming out of a cost of living crisis. If you sort of make it more expensive to go all the long way round, right, then that's going to cause another cost of living crisis. So they've done these surprise strikes. They've hit some Houthi targets in Yemen. And then, so the question is twofold, really. Is one, was that a good thing to do? And the other one is, like, should they have sought permission from Parliament first, right? So deal with the second thing first. So if you agree that there needed to be some reprisals, i.e. you couldn't keep saying, stop attacking our ships, and then them just go, or what? You go, well, we'll do another fucking warning is what we'll do. A very strongly worded warning. If you agree that you've got to do something, the last thing you'd necessarily want to do is give these guys a heads up with a massive long debate. We go, okay, we're just, you just flick on Sky News, lads. You'll see that we are, this is going to be a long one. Strap yourselves in. We're debating. And so if you just want to move your shit somewhere else,
yeah,
like your drone strikes. And so there were some people performatively saying that that Rishi Sunak should have come to Parliament, but he would have got permission. So if you say that you've got to do something, I think the way it was done was probably made sense. It did create like a slight problem for Keir Starmer because Rishi Sunak sort of reached out to him and said, look, we're going to, you know, we're going to do some shit. Just wanted to involve you, mate. Are you up for it? And he's like, yeah, fucking, yeah. And he was keen. Now, you know, he's got a left wing on his party that generally are quite queasy about any sort of military engagement. I suppose the big fear is like, it's definitely a legitimate question to say, could this cause more stuff? I mean, it does seem like stuff's ticking. You know what I mean? You've got Ukraine, you got Israel, you got fucking shipping lanes. It's never been a better time to do what you're doing, which is to switch off from it, I think.
Well, because I'm not smart enough. I'm just not. And I do have people up in arms in my DMs and emails saying, why aren't you putting all your opinions about the war, the ongoing overlapping wars, on your social media? And it's because I don't feel that I am necessarily followed or listened to by Joe Biden. I don't really know what posting about it is going to do other than give myself a nice pat on the back and be like, see, and all these women, it's all women who follow me mostly. And the ones who are saying, why aren't you posting your thoughts on Israel, Palestine? Why aren't you posting? I'm like, well, you've posted yours. Has the ceasefire happened? Like, no. So what? I don't know what to do. And I feel like it's too much. And men scare me with their violence. Do you know what I mean? I think in terms of, you know, war, I think I am very left wing in that I don't see how strikes are going to do anything except more strikes.
Yeah, but then it's like, but doing nothing is also a strategy in itself with consequences. One of the things that it did bring back was David Cameron back onto the scene. So just first up, backtracking a little bit, how did you feel when you saw Big Dave just stepping out of the limo back in like frontline politics?
I didn't see that. I didn't see that at all. I heard from people that David Cameron was back on the scene and that he was actually achieving a lot, that he had already been to Israel and he had already done all these trips and seemed like he had a fire lit. I don't understand how these men won't disappear, but it feels like he seems to be moving and shaking. That's what I heard.
Well, I guess it's legacy, right? The last thing that happened was that he trotted off because of Brexit. Essentially, didn't go the way he wanted, and he had to leave. And there's something about, and I realise there's this encoding within me that when a posh guy like that talks, there is a part of me that thinks, yeah, maybe you should be in charge. I do think that. I'm not proud of it, but I do think, like, go on, do the posh thing again. He's tall. He's posh, he walks in a way, you know, he has that kind of earnest gravitas about him.
But this is why British people are poisoned, because you guys grow up with these echelons of wealth and power and status where you would view posh people as being more authoritative or better or stronger or smarter just because of that divide. Like, you're taught from the time you're little that we are working class and they are not. And we are the have-nots and they are the well-educated. I think they're fucking morons because I didn't grow up with that.
Right.
And I'm sure that leaders from other countries, because they didn't grow up in the British system, I'm sure they look at all these guys like they're losers too.
But I know that they are no more skilled and no more equipped to run the country. But I do find there's something reassuring.
But that's your inner child, I think.
Yes, yeah.
So you know it, but do you really feel it? Because there's something about you people, and by you people, I mean British people, that you keep voting these guys in, you keep accepting that they're... And I know Rishi Sunak had a different life. Apparently, he didn't go to these posh schools, and he grew up with NHS family.
But he learned the voice, though, didn't he?
He learned the voice.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he's got one of the poshest voices of all, Catherine. You got to understand, we got to take action.
And I've spoken to people who've worked for him, and they say he's really nice. Like, that's the other thing. What these guys do really well is they're polite and they're nice.
Yep.
And I just don't see how any other world leader respects them. Do you think?
But then other world leaders, they see the crown, right?
True.
They've watched Downton. It's a great export, is the gentleman. You know, whether or not there's any backup for that as a concept.
Yeah.
People do believe in that. I mean, you talk about meeting these people. I met Jacob Rees-Mogg. Such a humble, lovely,
lovely
man.
Guy. Yeah. I've heard.
Oh, Catherine, it's really good to meet you. And he does this. He looks so burdened by everything, right? And you just think, oh, shit, you poor guy. And then Michael Gove, by apparently he's one of those guys that, like, you're the only person in the room. If he's talking to you, everything you say matters. So I've never bought into
his wife called me skinny once.
His wife called you skinny?
Yeah.
Is that a compliment or?
Yep.
Oh, see, this is weird. I've always thought this. Women like the word skinny.
Yeah.
I don't think men think skinny is good.
Oh, I'll take it. Thin, yeah. Sick. People are worried, Catherine. All compliments. But I can't separate these men from their actions. And I think I'm too old to be charmed by all this bullshit.
But I reckon if they were in the room, though, I reckon right now, if David Cameron bowled in here with his 6'4" frame, oh, Catherine, good.
Oh, you don't know me then, because I would not have done well in the jungle with these losers. Like, there's no way. Everyone was being really polite to, I can't even think of his name now. No, before him.
Hancock.
Matt Hancock. Yeah. Because they're British and they go, oh, well, the best thing to do is be polite. We know what he's done, but we'll be polite. No, there's no world where I'm being polite to David Cameron, Matt Hancock, none of them.
I mean, Matt Hancock, I would have struggled with more just because of the way that he seemed to enjoy brandishing the power of lockdowns. Mm. It's like, I remember he kept on saying there was that Christmas, like going, look, we really want people to have Christmas. Ugh. Like, how the fuck have we ended up with a situation where Matt Hancock is like the Grinch, potentially, he could steal Christmas, just run out of it in the door. And like, I mean, this is a separate question for a different podcast, but this is the weird thing with the Tories. People talk about, I often get asked now, would you vote for the next election? I'd find it tricky. But one of the biggest problems isn't what a lot of other people are angry about. For me, is that they shut the schools twice. I can't get past that. Yeah. After the first time they did it, we're like, well, that really sucks for people in high-rise flats and people are, you know, lower socioeconomic incomes who don't have fucking tutors. Right. And then they did it again because they didn't want to have a fight with Nicola Sturgeon.
Mm-hmm.
Arseholes. Okay, we will get on to talk about the nanny state in a minute. We're just going to do a quick hype here. Is that from my point of view, the book, I know a lot of people have bought it. If you have an Audible account, right, you probably have vouchers. It'll be the same for Catherine's book. You might have got bought vouchers for Christmas for a book. Just get out there and spend those vouchers on our books. Mine's British Bloke Decoded, The Audacity, which is just a scintillating, funny, smart and entertaining read. You could do a little twos up, you know what I mean?
You probably have two vouchers. I think I have eight vouchers.
So use your Audible for that and leave nice reviews where they go. I know that are you doing a show over stateside for Netflix or something? Or is this news? Have I read something in a tabloid here?
Maybe.
Catherine to gig for Disneyland for free after she ruins woman's career.
I have a new show that's out soon. Mm. It's coming out all February. It's called Parental Guidance, and that's on W Network and UK TV. And it's like almost a reality show about my family, but it's about exploring different types of parenting. Well, they kept telling us it wasn't a reality show, and I believe them.
Until they kept
But then they kept
it.
Being cameras in the kitchen, and I was like,
Catherine, this is definitely not a reality show. Can you just put this GoPro on your baby's head?
What do they call it? Like, I don't know.
Docuseries,
yeah,
right?
Docuseries, reality show. This is more British bullshit that I get lost in, you know?
Okay, so that's coming out in February on W.
February 5th on W Network, yeah.
Okay, it's really interesting you mentioned parenting because that's the next subject we're going to talk about. All right, so last week, the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, sort of said he was quite relaxed about nanny state. Nanny state is often said to be a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing. But if you look at COVID, the surveys suggested there were a lot of British people in a sort of BDSM way that were like, lock me down, put the orange ball in my mouth, mask me up in my house. And even now, there are 20% of people that think nightclubs should never have reopened. And 10% of people that think we should have a constant curfew, right? This still exists. So there's actually a broad base for people wanting to be told what to do, right? So they're talking about this issue of kids brushing their teeth, right? As is everything else, there's an epidemic of kids who can't brush their teeth, right? I do think COVID has had an impact, so it's probably got worse. So the idea Labour came out with was that there's going to be this state-supervised, i.e. through schools, supervised brushing in schools. They're going to spend for a relatively small sum, 9 million, which is not massive in terms of state spending. I kind of get it, you know, like kids brushing their teeth, all good. I think two things. On the one hand, teachers already overburdened, already teaching kids how to share, fucking wipe their ass, do you know what I mean? Drink from cups, all that sort of stuff. And then you throw this in, There's a part of me that just thinks that's a parent's job. And I know, like, people have got hard budgets, but a toothbrush and toothpaste last quite a long time. Here it is. Your job in the morning, your kid gets up, right? You say, come here. You say, brush your teeth. And then they come in and then you go, come here, and you smell their face. You smell their face. And even if it smells of mint, because they might have just smeared some of it on their face.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's this creep where if you keep taking away things that human beings are supposed to do from them, you infantilize them a little bit. What do you think?
Well, I think they're just missing the crux of why parents are failing at teaching these really important self-care lessons to small children. And that is, the more inflation, the higher the cost of living, the more burden and pressure that you put on families who don't have enough to get by, then the more they are then without resources to be effective at home. You look at a world where you could have a nurse and a firefighter buying a nice house, taking holidays every year, spending time with their families. Those days are gone. So parents probably don't have the resources to potty train their kids, to teach their kids to wash themselves properly, to brush their teeth, because they're rushing off to a state-sanctioned daycare as early as they can so they can do two jobs just so they can put food on the table and heat the house. And then the kids are going to school, and then they're going to an after-school program where they're being looked after by a grandparent because they can't afford actual childcare. I mean, you always have to think, like, who's benefiting from this? And I really think that these evil people in our government, and I call them evil explicitly, I don't think it's an accident. I think that they want...
You think is this government generally are evil, or these specific Tories are evil?
Both. Okay. I think wanting to be in government right now, even
so
if
the moment
Keir Starmer,
Labour get in government, evil.
I think they're evil too. I think Keir Starmer, I don't know a lot about him. I feel like he's a really flaccid opposition, but... I think, like, probably if you were like, hey, you can be prime minister, but you have to do this, 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 and do these bad things, I think you'd be like, okay, because it's become about the promotion, about power, and this is why I'm out. I feel like such a nihilist, but I'm out. I feel like they're all mean and evil in their own ways and power hungry, and they've lost sight of, like, actually looking after their constituencies. They don't do that.
Lib Dems, evil, but, like, not even good at being evil.
Just, like...
not evil enough to get power.
Yeah.
That's also embarrassing
for them.
Not
evil enough, yeah. But I just think they want your kids to be institutionalized ultimately. And they're taking parents' jobs away from parents. And they're going, we'll teach them to be potty trained. We'll brush their teeth. We'll do all this. Because actually you have to work 18 hours a day until you're dead just to heat your house. Don't you think like that's the bigger picture of what's happening?
Well, I don't know if they're smart enough to do that joined up level of thinking whereby on the one hand they make you busy and the other. I don't think they're that smart to say then you will have to rely on us. I just think that's a net consequence maybe of being a bit busier. But I just think I just always have to believe in personal responsibility because that's what sets you free. If you think I can change my situation and, you know, a toothbrush, you can get them for like a pound. Your toothpaste will last you quite a while. I know that budgets are stretched. I have to believe that even the most stretched budget can kind of run to that. And
well,
also, I mean,
don't you think mental health is stretched, and don't you think time is stretched? And it's not about the toothbrush at all. It's about the frame of mind to be at home and take that extra time in the morning that you don't have because you're stressed about your marriage and you're stressed about your bills and the cost of living, and to sit with your child and brush their teeth. Like, I think people are having breakdowns.
But you are. I mean, the thing is, famously with the potty training at 1 year old, right? At this point in time, you know, you've got two young children. You know, you've got a husband, so you've got an older child. You've got a teenage daughter. You're working all the time. Yeah. Your time is stretched, but you're still doing these things. I know that obviously money makes a big difference. I think what you're offering is a sympathetic view to people, but actually what you expect to yourself is quite exacting. You know,
I don't think I'm navigating the same issues that
but most
families
are. If you were skin and working three jobs, you would still make your kids brush their teeth every morning, right?
I hope so, unless my mental health was then faltering. And just to get out of bed to get to my first job was very difficult. And I started letting a few things slide and I wouldn't think I wasn't brushing my kids' teeth. I'll be honest with you, Violet's not brushing her teeth as often as I'd like. She's 14 years old. Am I on top of that? I'm not.
And what about, like, when you say let things slide, are we talking like pajamas beyond 10 a.m.?
I know how you feel.
Because that is the ultimate sign of fluffy slippers. Have you ever driven to school to pick a child up wearing slippers?
Jeff, I don't even want to tell you what I've done. I'm an artist.
Yeah.
I have been reprimanded for doing the school run in a towel. I have driven to school wearing a towel, Jeff, towel. And I have done the school run in bathrobes and fluffy slippers and all sorts because, again, I come from a land where we don't have working class. We don't have that. We don't have these hang-ups.
Yeah, just have mental people, non-mental.
Right.
People.
I'm just being a mental artist.
So you said that day you was mental. You couldn't even blame it on class.
I would drive somewhere in a towel. Like, it's a bit cold today, but if I was warm, I would do it. I don't really have I would just, I don't care. And Balenciaga actually just released a skirt that's 700 pounds and it just looks like a towel. I'll show it to you. Balenciaga did this.
You can show it to me, just don't show it to Emma, I think is the key thing. While you're looking that up, so we are faced with the almost certainty of a Labour government. So one guy that I find interesting on the opposition benches is Wes Streeting, right? Shadow Minister for Health. And he started saying this about the NHS, which I think is a good way to look at it, is it's a service, not a shrine. Now, coming from the outside, right, I'm guessing you love the principle, the idea of healthcare that's free at the point of service, mm-hmm. right? And so do I. But the fuck that, that is not 700. Get the, I don't care whose name is on that. That is a towel. That is a towel. Yeah. That's a 700 pounds towel.
I'm a trendsetter. Go on.
There's people now Googling towels. Once you say something is stupid, you know, like when they put gold flakes in something and go, oh, the new most, there's always the most thing, right? So go, have you heard there's a bottle of champagne where a glass of it is like 100 grand? There'll be some prick somewhere that wants to buy. That's all you need to do is you go, oh, there's a 7 grand towel. If I said that to Emma and went back, there's a 7 grand towel, she'd want to know who was selling it. She wouldn't necessarily want to buy it, but she'd like to toy with the idea of owning it.
I'm going to send it to Emma as a prank on you.
Wow.
And she'll be like, oh, that cool towel Catherine Ryan sent me, 700 pounds. And she'll wear it. And that will just eat you up inside because I know how you feel.
Think of like the hardest writing day I ever did. And I will presume that it stole that day from me. And every time that I see that towel, that is so stupid.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
But Wes Streeting has been saying like, it's a service, not a shrine.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that, no, that's a leading question. Is that, I can't not say it's a leading question. Isn't that a great way to look at the NHS, right? We pay for it, let's expect more from it. The shrine thing, whereby no political, because I think this is the thing with the Tories, right? So you say this perception of evil means that the Tories, if they really wanted to do something radical with the NHS, everyone would go, you're trying to sell it to Donald Trump for some chlorinated chicken or something, right? Whereas Labour, we go, well, they like the NHS, let's just see where they go with it. So there's every chance that a Labour government might do something radical.
Of course they will.
A service, not a shrine. Go on, Wes. I mean, it's probably not useful to Wes Streeting that I am saying he's a good guy.
Because the NHS is deeply flawed.
Well, yeah.
But that's because it's so woefully underfunded.
And also, some of the people that work there, like any big organisation, this is the difficult thing. If you've had bad service by the NHS, if you're talking in the public eye, you hear this with like celebrities on radio, they'll go, and first of all, I just want to say that all the people that worked there were just amazing. Everyone's amazing. Reporters were amazing. They were all, I think they actually had wings and halos, like physical wings, and they could all fly and they were children of God. But you go, just say the shit service that you had.
Yeah.
Because some of it, not everything is to do with being overworked. This is probably the most right-wing and populist I've sounded for a while.
Well, but maybe, you know, you'd get a chip on your shoulder after a while of being like, you just know that you're not looked after or cared about. And then you go, it's the same reason that your hospitality workers and servers are terrible. It's because they don't get tipped and they don't get treated well.
They don't, but I don't ever want to go to the American thing where they give you a burger and they go,
Can
you settle my credit card?
But no.
That's fucked up. All right. I think there's some distance between us here, but I think individual responsibility.
Well, let me say, I don't use the NHS. So, like, if I can avoid it, I do not use the NHS. My children don't have a GP. I take them to private doctors. And I know that I'm part of the problem then, too. I have left-wing people who are like, you're not supposed to do that if you do that. Mm. And all these private doctors are also NHS doctors. It's the same doctors, but I do get to – I viewed it as, like, not contributing to the queue. And then other people tell me I'm wrong. And as long
Yeah, not contributing to the queue, but also you've sort of done the Disney liaison where you've actually just – you know, like the chariots in the Disney films when they grow wings, you just sort of flew above the queue as well. Look, I'm with you. Your primary responsibility is your family's health.
Yeah.
You
know?
So if you have the means to do it, you got to do it. But apparently that makes you evil. You can't say anything.
I am a little bit evil. I'm a complicated person.
Yeah.
Like if I could change the world and snap my fingers and we could live in like wonderful socialism where like everybody had wonderful things and everyone was cared for the way they should be, then fine. But because I can't change that, I do the evil thing of switching off and then, like, getting my kids a Disneyland liaison and taking them to the Portland.
It's funny that what people often call evil also sounds like sensible. Okay, well, that has been episode 232 with Catherine Ryan. As I say, do check out Cass' excellent podcast and also the book. And then hopefully, from the sounds of it, a tour at some point in the near future.
I'm in a tour in 2024. Watch out for my tickets on sale. Please come. If you don't, someone else will. Don't worry about it. I'm doing well still. And my new show is called Parental Guidance on the W Network.
Okay. And then I'll be back next week. And I promise I'll be talking about the oh my God, what an awful way to podcast. I was about to say, I promise I'll be talking about the grooming scandal. I'm going to leave that in. I do promise that. I will be, but I just don't want anybody to think I've ducked the subject. So What an amazing way to end a lovely podcast. I promise I'll be talking about grooming next week. All right, see you then. Bye.